Skeeter Bill Comes to Town, W.C. Tuttle. The Project Gutenberg ebook of Skeeter Bill Comes to Town. This ebook is for the use of anyone anywhere in the United States and most other parts of the world at no cost and with almost no restrictions whatsoever. You may copy it, give it away, or reuse it under the terms of the Project Gutenberg license included with this ebook or online at www.gutenberg.org. If you are not located in the United States, you will have to check the laws of the country where you are located before using this ebook title. Skeeter Bill Comes to Town author, W.C. Tuttle, release date, October 4, 2025, ebook 76983. Language, English, original publication. Chicago, IL, Best Publications, Inc., 1948, other information and formats. www.gutenberg.org/ebook/76983credits. Roger Frank, asterisk start of the project GUTENBRGEBOOK Skeeter Bill Comes to Town asterisk, Skeeter Bill Comes to Town. A novelette by W.C. Tuttle. This salty seven-footer heads for Yellow Butte to celebrate a kid's birthday and does some plum-fast shooting on the way. I. William Harrison Sarg, known as Skeeter Bill, leaned against the bar of the only saloon in Temple Rock and considered the fly-specked back bar. Skeeter was at least 7 feet tall in his high heels and sombrero. He had wide shoulders which tapered sharply to a wasp-like waist and a long pair of skinny legs encased in tight-fitting, faded overalls. He wore a colorless shirt, a wispy red handkerchief around his long neck, the ends held tight with a blue poker chip. Around his thin waist was a homemade, form-fitting gun belt, and his holstered Colt .45 hung low along his thigh. Skeeter Bill was not handsome. His face was long, thin, with high cheekbones and a gash-like mouth, and eyes that were just a little green-tinted. He was not handsome, but he looked efficient. A fat bartender, one damp lock of hair plastered down over one eyebrow, looked questioningly at the tall cowpoke. Skeeter shook his head. "If it was ice cold, I'd take more," he said quietly, "but I just can't go more'n 3 bottles of lukewarm pop." "You're the only pop drinker I've met," said the bartender. "You won't never get happy on that stuff." "No," agreed Skeeter, "nor unhappy either, my friend. How are things these days in Roadrunner Valley?" "Oh, all right," replied the bartender. "You've been there?" "Not for a couple of years. Been down in the panhandle, where I didn't hear much news of this country." "You been down there lately?" "Couple months ago. I worked there for a year, tendin' bar in the 7-Up at Yellow Butte." "Yeah, I used to know Buck Hadley. He still own it." "Not now, it belongs to Slim Lacey." "Slim Lacey?" Skeeter stared at the bartender. "You say that Slim Lacey owns the 7-Up?" "Well, he did a month ago, I know." Skeeter shoved his hat back and scratched his forehead. He seemed a little astonished. He said, "Well, meb it's all right. You'd probably know Hootie Edwards." "No, I didn't, but I've heard of him. He left there before I went to Yellow Butte." Skeeter cuffed his hat sideways on his head, leaned his elbows on the bar, and scowled at the fat bartender. "You mean that Hootie Edwards ain't down there no more?" he asked incredulously. The bartender shook his head. "Didn't you know about him?" "Know what about him?" asked Skeeter quickly. "That he went to the pen for 20 years. Skeeter's head and shoulders sagged momentarily, and he blinked in amazement. "You ain't jockin', I hope you are, mister," he said huskily. "I wouldn't joke on a thing like that. He's been gone quite a while, they told me. He wrecked the bank in Yellow Butte, never did have another one." "I'm a sea serpent's sister," whispered Skeeter. "Tell me what ya know about it, will ya?" The bartender told him that Hootie Edwards had forced the banker and his wife from their home to the bank. There he had compelled the banker to open the vault. Then he tied them both up and took his own time in looting the vault. It was close to morning, and the sheriff, coming from an all-night poker game, looked into the bank window and saw moonlight shining through the open doorway at the rear of the room. He ran around to the rear of the building, just as the robber was riding away. They exchanged shots, and the sheriff said he scored a hit, but the man got away. Later in the day, they found Hootie Edwards sprawled beside a trail near his own ranch house, his white horse tangled up in the brush near him. The bandit had ridden a white horse. Edwards still had the black mask around his neck. The doctor said he had been shot and would have eventually bled to death if they hadn't found him. Skeeter listened to the whole tale, his face a mask of his feelings. "Yussi," remarked the bartender, "he wasn't able to prove no alibi. His wife said he left home after supper, common to Yellow Butte. Hootie said he didn't know what happened. He had a few drinks in Yellow Butte, but everything is a blank after that, except that he remembers getting on his horse. They gave him 20 years, but they didn't get the money back. They say he cashed it, but he swore he didn't remember what he'd done. He was married, said Skeeter slowly, and had two kids. Yeah, I've seen them, a boy and a girl. The boy, said Skeeter huskily, is named William S. Edwards. They named him after me, Bill Sarg. He'll be 12 years of age in a few days, and I was aiming to help him celebrate his birthday. Came all the way from Texas to do that. Yes, see, he's the only kid that ever was named after me. That's hard luck, Sarg, so you're Skeeter Bill Sarg. I've heard of you. They say you can drop a dollar with your right hand from your hip, draw your gun, and hit the dollar before it hits the ground. I have, nodded Skeeter soberly, and I'm also shy the little toe on my right foot. They used to say that I had more brains in my right hand than I have in my head, too. Meb it's cause I use it more. I wonder what Mrs. Edwards is doing to support her family. Worked in a restaurant when I was there, slingin' hash. She's a pretty woman, I'll say that. She's awful nice, too, said Skeeter. I wouldn't like to hear anybody say she ain't. And that kid was named after me, too. Well, I reckon I'll be moving on. See ya later. Are you going down to see the kids, Sarg? Skeeter nodded. After all, he replied, no matter what happened, he'll have his 12th birthday in a few days. Tell him hello for me, said the bartender. Just say that Fatty, the bartender, said happy birthday. We both appreciate that, said Skeeter, smiling faintly. I'll tell him. A pall of dust hung over the town of Yellow Butte as Skeeter Bill rode in. They were loading cattle at the big corrals down at the railroad tracks. Yellow Butte was the shipping point for all of Roadrunner Valley. There was nothing beautiful about Yellow Butte, with its crooked, narrow streets, sandblasted signs, and false-fronted buildings. Lazily, Skeeter Bill dismounted and tied his horse at a hitch rack, which was mercifully in the shade of the 7-Up saloon. On the other side of the street, Skeeter could see the faded and scarred gold lettering on a large window, Bank of Yellow Butte. It was used now as a storeroom for the general merchandise store. Skeeter Bill was familiar with all of Yellow Butte, even those places of business whose signs had long since faded out. He went into the 7-Up saloon. It was quite a large establishment, with gambling layouts along one side and a long bar on the other. It smelled of stale beer and spilled liquor, but it was cool in there. Several men were at the long bar, and Skeeter recognized them at a glance. Sam Keenan, owner of the Tumbling K, Al Creedon, the big sheriff, Muddy Pool, his deputy and Slim Lacey, who the bartender at Temple Rock had said was the new owner of the 7-Up saloon. Muddy Pool was the first to recognize Skeeter Bill in the subdued light of the room, and he emitted a yip of delight. If it ain't old Skeet, he exclaimed. Welcome back among us. Hiya, Muddy, grinned Skeeter Bill. Gents, howdy. They all shook hands with Skeeter, but not all were as enthusiastic as Muddy Pool, who said, where on earth did you drop from, Skeet? Oh, I just drifted in, Muddy. Thought I'd see what the old place looked like again. How's everybody? Finern Froghair, mostly. Skeeter looked curiously at Slim Lacey. When Skeeter Bill left Yellow Butte, Slim Lacey was a down-at-the-heel swamper in a little saloon at the other end of town, and without a decent shirt to his back, but now he was wearing white silk shirts, broadcloth pants, and patent leather shoes. Slim's smile was always sickly, and it hadn't changed much, Skeeter Bill said. How ya common, Slim? Fine, Skeet. Ya're looking good. Glad to see ya back. Have a drink. You never knowed Skeet to take a drink, reminded Muddy. Thank ya, smiled Skeeter Bill. You've got a memory, Muddy. It ain't hard to remember them what don't drink, Skeet. Well, I've got to go back to the corral, said Keenan, placing his glass on the bar. We're shipping today, Skeet. Yeah, I saw the dust in the air, Sam. How's the market? Just fair. It's always down when I've got stuff to ship. Muddy Pool walked outside with Skeeter Bill. Muddy knew of the friendship between Skeeter Bill and Hootie Edwards. Do ya know about Hootie? Asked the deputy quietly. Skeeter Bill nodded. I saw Fatty the bartender in Temple Rock and he told me about Hootie. First I'd heard, Muddy. It sure hurt to hear a thing like that, don't you know it? Hurt me too, said Muddy. Hootie was fine. Margie is working down in the New York chop house, doing her best to keep the kids going. We've tried to help her, Skeet, but she's proud. Yeah, I bet she is. Whatever became of the Circle E after they sent Hootie away? Well, the law took it over for the bank. You see, the bank was busted flat, and so was most folks around here. You never can sell a thing like that for what it's worth. In fact, nobody was in shape to buy it, but Sam Keenan finally bought it for about 2 bits on the dollar. Skeeter Bill nodded slowly. I can understand that, Muddy, but how come Slim Lacey owns the 7-Up? When I left here, he didn't have a cent. Well, it does sound kind of funny, but it just goes to prove that you never can tell which way a dill pickle will squirt. Buck Hadley wanted to sell out and go back east, and Slim got himself an idea. He was tendin' bar for Buck at the time. So Slim borrowed money to pay down on the place and paid it off so much a month. Maybe it ain't all paid off yet, but he's doing all right. Slim Shore turned over a new leaf. I'm glad to see him getting ahead, said Skeeter Bill. Well, I'll be heading for some food, I reckon, Muddy. See ya later. Margie Edwards dropped a tray of dishes flat on the floor and stood there, staring at Skeeter Bill, ignoring the broken glass and crockery. Only a few people were in the little restaurant at the time. The crash was terrific, bringing the cook proprietor, Shorty Hale, from the kitchen on the run. He blurted, "My gosh, can't ya even?" and then he stopped, staring up at Skeeter Bill. "Howdy, Shorty," said Skeeter calmly. "Well, ha, howdy, Skeeter Bill, Sarg. I'm sorry," said the woman quietly. It slipped. That's all right, assured Shorty. I'll get a broom. Margie Edwards looked at Skeeter and down at the mess on the floor. She said, I'll be off shift in about 10 minutes, Skeeter. Sorry I scared ya, he smiled slowly. You didn't, you shocked me, Skeeter. Shorty came back with a broom and a dustpan. Skeeter said, Shorty, I'd like to have about 6 eggs, sunny side up, and a lot of coffee. The pie can wait until I'm through. Common right up, grinned Shorty. My, you ain't changed a bit, Skeeter. 6 eggs and coffee and the pie awaits. Set down with him, Ms. Edwards, I'll do the waitin' this time. Roman 2. Less than an hour later, Skeeter sat with Mrs. Edwards on the porch of their little house, which was only an unpainted shack, discussing the misfortunes of the Edwards family. Margie Edwards was still a pretty woman in spite of her hard work trying to keep her family together. The two children were in school. I hear from Hootie almost every week, she told Skeeter. He's grown bitter. If Hootie pulled that job, why wouldn't he be bitter? Asked Skeeter. He did, declared Margie flatly. I don't care what the law says. Everybody was against him because the breaking of the bank just about broke everybody in the valley. They took the ranch and all the stock, trying to get something out of it. Did Hootie need money, Margie? The woman nodded. He did, but only to expand. Hootie wanted to raise better cattle, and breeding stock is expensive. The bank wouldn't help him. They said he had harebrained ideas. Skeeter sighed and wiped his forehead with a sleeve. I can't figure out why Hootie didn't know what happened. He couldn't either, Skeeter. He says he only took 3 drinks in the 7-Up saloon that night, but he barely remembers getting on his horse. After that, it was a blank, he says. At the trial, said Skeeter, did any testimony show that Hootie had only 3 drinks? Mrs. Edwards nodded. Yes, it did. Slim Lacey was tending bar at that time, and he said Hootie didn't drink enough to be drunk. He didn't think he had more than 3 drinks. Slim Lacey must have done pretty darn well, remarked Skeeter. He was broke when I left here. Mrs. Edwards nodded. I guess he was. I never speak to him. One day he got fresh with me and Hootie knocked out his front teeth. If you look close, he has a bridge for 2 front teeth. I'd like to have seen that. Skeeter Bill smiled. Mrs. Edwards admitted that she wasn't making much money and that Shorty Hale wasn't the best boss on earth. She said, he was all ready to explode over the broken dishes when he saw you, Skeeter. He'd have probably fired me on the spot. Yeah, I reckon so, Skeeter grinned. Sometimes I believe I have a common influence on folks, Margie. They sat there and talked until the two children came home. Nellie was 9, a slip of a girl with big, blue eyes looking very much like her mother, but Bill was husky, redheaded, and had eyes like his father. Nellie was shy of this tall stranger, but Bill let out a whoop. He remembered Skeeter Bill and shook hands with him. Gee, he said, it's kind of like home, Mom. Where have you been, Mr. Sarg? Down in Texas, Bill, following dogies. You're sure growing up fast. How old are ya, Bill? I'll be 12 next Saturday. Yeah, that's right. 12 years old. Bill, I was the first outsider to poke a finger at ya, don't ya know it? Mom told me you was. We were talking about you a while ago, kind of wondering where you were, and now you're here. Talking about me? Marveled Skeeter Bill. Well, I do know, Bill, what would ya like to have for your birthday? Young Bill thought it over soberly. Finally, he said, if I could have just what I want, I'd take my dad. Skeeter looked at Bill's mother, and there were tears in her eyes. No one had any comments until Skeeter said quietly, yeah, I reckon we'd all like that, Bill. Well, I guess I'll kind of drift back and see who I can talk to. You never know who is glad to see you back. I'll see you some more, folks. You are welcome to stay here with us, Skeeter, said Mrs. Edwards quickly. Our home is your home. That's sure sweet of you, Margie, he said soberly. No, I couldn't do that, but I'll be around. Skeeter Bill picked up his big hat and went slowly up the dirt street. Young Bill said, Mom, he's an awful lot like Dad. Margie nodded thoughtfully and went into the house. Nellie said, Gee, Bill, is that the man you was named after? That's right, sis. I hope I grow up with long legs and big hands like he's got. They say he can take a mean steer and stand him right on his head. Why? Asked Nellie. Aw, you're just a girl, you wouldn't understand. Let's go in and help Mom get supper. Skeeter Bill wandered up to the 7-Up saloon. Few people were in the place, and Slim Lacey was sitting at a card table, reading a newspaper. He nodded to Skeeter, who went over and sat down with Slim. "How does the old place look to ya?" asked Slim, folding the paper and tossing it aside. "Same as ever. Slim, I want to ask you a few questions. I heard about Hootie Edwards in Temple Rock. On that night, how many drinks did Hootie take in here?" Slim smiled shortly. "Skeeter, I can't swear to it, but I think he took about 3. Meb it was 4, but no more. Whiskey? Yeah, I don't believe he ever drank anything else." "Any special kind of whiskey, Slim?" "No, just bar whiskey out of a barrel. What's this all about?" Skeeter looked thoughtfully at Slim for several moments. "Slim," he said confidentially, "I'm going to prove that Hootie never robbed that bank." "How?" asked Slim blankly. "A lot of other folks would like to know too, Slim. Keep this under your hat, will ya? I don't want to be interrupted in my job. You'll know later, but keep it dark, Slim. See ya later." Skeeter went over to the general store, where he bought a package of tobacco and cigarette papers. Then he sat down on the shaded porch to enjoy a smoke and commune with his own soul. "Bill Sarg," he told himself, "you're crazy, but it's pleasant. If I can make enough people believe that I know something, I might find out more than I know now. Anyway, one more lie won't hurt my immortal soul, I reckon." He was sitting there when a lone rider came into town, started to draw up at the 7-Up saloon, but swung around and came over to the hotel hitch rack. Skeeter Bill grinned slowly. The rider was Fuzzy Davis, owner of the bar D Spread, and one of the most explosive characters Skeeter had ever known. Fuzzy was only a few inches over 5 feet tall, and in wet weather he might weigh 100 pounds, but that 100 pounds was all fighting man. He wore a 5 triple a boot, but his .45 was as big as anybody carried on their hip. He tied his horse, swore a little under his breath as he stepped up on the sidewalk, and then he saw Skeeter Bill. He didn't say anything at once. He blinked, looked away, adjusted his neckerchief, and cleared his throat raspingly. Then he looked at Skeeter once more. "Meb," he remarked quietly, "it's the heat, and agin Meb it's my general rundown condition, but doggone it, you look like somebody I've known. Set my mind at rest, will ya?" "Hiya ya, Fuzzy," Skeeter Bill said with a grin. "You ol' pelicano," snorted Fuzzy. "You darned ol', how are ya, Skeet? Finern the down on a gnat, Fuzzy. Set down, you little anteater. How have ya been anyway?" Fuzzy sat down and drew a deep breath. "I'm terrible," he whispered. "I'm mad, and when I'm mad, I'm terrible. You look fine, Fuzzy." "That's the whole trouble with me, Skeet. The finer I look, the worse I am. I'll betcha that when I'm dead, they'll say, 'Well, well, there's Fuzzy Adams, I never seen him look better.'" "You ain't sick, are ya?" asked Skeeter Bill, frowning. The pint-sized rancher shook his head. "Shucks, no, I'm mad, I tell ya. Listen, will ya? This morning, I went over to my big waterhole at Hangin' Rock. You know the place. It's fenced, along with about 700 acres. Water's scarce around here, and there was only enough for my few doggies. Well, sir, some sticky rope son of a gun had tied off on about a quarter mile of almost new barbed wire all over creation. My spring was almost dry, and around it was every blasted tomahawk, JML and tumblin' K-cow in the valley." "That," remarked Skeeter Bill, "don't sound like a joke." "It wasn't intended as no joke, Skeet. The ends was cut as slick as a whistle. I dunno if I'll ever get that waterhole cleaned out and built up again. See why I'm mad? Ya do." "Well, ya're an observin' sort of a feller, Skeet. How come you're back here, and where ya been?" "Been down in Texas, Fuzzy. Ya see, I well you knew that Hootie Edwards named his boy after me, did ya?" "Hootie," replied Fuzzy, "was prone to do fool things. Go on with your alibi, son." "Well, I came back to help the kids celebrate his 12th birthday, Fuzzy, and look what I found out." "Ya mean about Hootie? Oh yeah. Well, that was bad, Skeet. I'd have sworn that Hootie was honest, even if he did name his kid after you. Honest, but slightly ignorant, as ya might say." "I appreciate your sympathy for the boy," said Skeeter soberly. "But just what are ya going to do about that waterhole?" "Me? What am I going to do about it? Huh, I'm going to get the sheriff to swear out a warrant for Dan Houck. Me and him ain't friends, ya understand. We ain't been for years. It's just like the big spit in the crick to do a thing like that." "Any proof, Fuzzy?" "There ya go, dad blame it, ya're as bad as Emmy. Proof, you'll get sued for false charges. Dad blast it, ain't this a free country? You stilt-legged gallinipper common up here from Texas, telling me what to do. It's my waterhole, ain't it? Well, don't sit there and grin like a monkey with a stomach ache. Say something. How is Aunt Emmy, Fuzzy?" "Well, that ain't exactly changin' the subject. She's fine. Still actin' as your guardian angel, eh?" "She sniffs my breath, if that's what ya mean. Got the best nose for alcohol in the world. Her ma was scared by a bloodhound. Emmy is all right, except that she uses the Bible as a rule book. She's aggin' the devil, I know that. I ain't never knowed anybody so set against an entire stranger as she is aggin' the devil. Personally, I'd like to meet him and ask him how he stands it." Meb, it's the heat, Fuzzy. If ya get hot enough, ya can stand anything. How's the bar D going, except for the waterhole? Well, pretty good, Skeet. Have ya got a horse here? Ya have. Go hang the hull on him, and we'll be going. Ya mean ya're invitin' me out to the ranch? Asked Skeeter. I am not. I'm orderin' ya. Emmy'd never forgive me if I told her you was in town and didn't come out with me. And you know what it means to not have forgiveness for your sins, Skeet. Skeeter Bill had known Aunt Emma Davis for years. Tall, raw-boned, severe-looking, her wispy, colorless hair drawn tightly to a frizzly-looking knob at the back of her head, she stood on the porch of the Bar D Ranch House, shading her eyes against the sun as Skeeter Bill and Fuzzy rode up to the porch. Emmy, called Fuzzy, I found me a prodigal son. Skeeter grinned, and Mrs. Davis leaned out further, clinging with one hand to a porch post. Skeeter Bill, she half-screamed. You get off that horse and come here. Where on earth did you come from? Aunt Emma, I'm fresh from Texas, he grinned. You're fresh from any place you come from, young man. Unpin yourself from that saddle. My, my, you're the last man I ever expected to see. I had a hunch that you two was the sheriff and deputy, common in to tell me that Fuzzy was in jail or among the angels. Ya see, he had an awful mad expression when he left here. No, I ain't going to kiss you, Skeeter. Fuzzy's the only man I ever kissed, and don't make any funny remarks about it. I realize that I've missed a lot in life. Roman 3. Fuzzy took the two horses down to the stable, while Skeeter Bill sat down on the shaded porch with Mrs. Davis. She didn't ask questions, but waited for Skeeter Bill to tell what he wanted to tell. Yar lookin' fine, Aunt Emma, remarked Skeeter. I look just like I've looked for 20 years and it ain't fine. Time don't improve me, Skeeter. You ain't changed. I'm so good lookin', said Skeeter soberly, that any change would have to be for the worse. I feel good, too. Ya remember that Hootie and Margie named their boy after me, don't ya? Aunt Emma nodded. A terrible thing to wish upon a helpless young one, Skeeter, but go ahead. He's 12 next Saturday. I asked him what he wanted for his birthday, and he said he wanted his dad. Mrs. Davis looked sharply at Skeeter Bill. You wasn't here when Hootie Edwards got in trouble, Skeeter. You don't know what it meant to the folks of Roadrunner Valley. It busted the bank and busted all of us. Most of us ain't got back on our feet since. I know we ain't. I feel awful sorry for Margie and her two kids, but I can't feel sorry for Hootie. You feel sure that he done it, Aunt Emma? She nodded quickly. It's a cinch, Skeeter. It didn't take the jury 5 minutes all to agree that he was guilty. Even his own lawyer said they didn't have a leg to stand on. It made it awful hard for Margie. Lots of folks act like she was guilty, too, but she didn't have no hand in it. The two kids had a hard time in school, too. Most of their parents went busted in the deal, and it ain't nice for kids having fingers pointed at 'em. Hootie was my friend, Aunt Emma, said Skeeter slowly. I know he was. You two was thicker than seven fingers on one hand, but hard facts are hard facts, Skeeter. Yeah, I reckon so. What became of the banker and his wife? Oh, they moved away. Henry Weldon ran the bank for Phoenix Men, and they closed it. Never opened since. The loot was close to $100,000, they said, but nobody ever found where Hootie cashed it. He swore he didn't know what he'd done. Fuzzy came up from the stable and sat down, mopping his brow. How, ya like to ride out to Hangin' Rock Spring? He asked. I've got my two cowpokes out there, trying to bring order out of chaos, as Emmy says. I'd like to, said Skeeter, rising. Don't be too late, said Mrs. Davis. I'll have supper ready at 6 o'clock. I ain't never been late to a meal out here, Aunt Emma, Skeeter said with a grin and added, and as a matter of fact, I ain't had a good meal since. On the way out there, Fuzzy explained about water troubles in Roadrunner Valley. I had to fence Hangin' Rock, he explained. The other spreads have got more water than I have, and they wanted to keep me from having any. It was my property and not open range. The court decided that for me, but well, you can see what happened. You and Dan Houck ain't friends, eh? Never have been, Skeet. He'd like to run me out. They tell me that the bank took over Hootie's place and sold it to Sam Keenan. Yeah, that's right. The bank sold the stock but sold the ranch to Sam. He got it dirt cheap, too. They found Len Riggs and Ollie Ashley, Fuzzy's two cowpunchers, at the spring, working with shovels, trying to repair the damage that the cattle had made. Both of them remembered Skeeter Bill. Skeeter rode over and looked at the tangled wires where they had been left. This was a real menace to range stock, no matter what the brand. He rode down along the fence line, looking it over. Some of the posts had been set so loosely the wire had pulled them out. Skeeter was sitting on his horse, studying the situation, when his gaze fell upon an object beside some trampled brush. He swung down, without dismounting, and picked it up. It was a rawhide Honda with about a foot of hard-twist lariat rope still attached. Evidently, a rope had snapped from the wires or a post, and the Honda had been flung aside where the rider had not been able to find it. Skeeter looked it over carefully. took off the piece of rope and put the Honda in his pocket before riding back to the spring, where Fuzzy was working with the two cowboys. They had the spring pretty well cleaned out, but it would do little good without a fence. They tied their lariat ropes to the tangled wires and managed to straighten them out. It was quite a job, getting the fence back where it would obstruct cattle from the spring and putting the wire back where it would not tangle cattle. "Who's ridden for Dan Houck now?" asked Skeeter as they rode back to the ranch house. "Ob Steele, Jim Grush, and Andy Case," replied Fuzzy. "Does Sam Keenan still ramrod his own outfit?" "No, he's got a feller named Johnny Greer. He's a good man, too." "Looks to me like a turkey-necked gunslinger from Texas," declared Len Riggs. "Chaws his tobacco and his right hand is always crooked, ready to fit a gun butt." "Len is a natural-born fault-finder," Fuzzy explained. "Why, he can't even see any good in me." "That," said Skeeter, smiling, "is an intelligent state of Bane." Len whooped and slapped his leg with a quirt. "That's a good one," he declared. "I still don't like Johnny Greer." "If he wasn't all right, Sam Keenan wouldn't have him, you can bet on that," declared Fuzzy. "Sam's particular." Mrs. Davis had a big supper ready for them, and they all did justice to it. Skeeter declared it was the first real meal he had eaten since he left Roadrunner Valley. He wanted to go back to town that evening, but the Davises vetoed that at once. Skeeter, Bill, and Fuzzy went to Yellow Butte next day. Fuzzy wanted to talk with the sheriff about the vandalism, as he called it. Al Creedon, the sheriff, listened attentively and said he'd see what could be done about it. While they were talking, Sam Keenan and his foreman, Johnny Greer, walked in. Keenan introduced Greer to Skeeter Bill, and Fuzzy told them what happened at Hanging Rock. "Well, did you get your fence fixed again?" asked Keenan. "Yeah, after a fashion, Sam." "Well, if you need more men, I'll send some over, Fuzzy." "No, we got it fixed pretty good. It'll need a little more wire, but I've got that at the ranch." "The only thing is," remarked the sheriff, "will it be torn down again by the same persons? If they done it once, you know. Might be interestin'." Skeeter Bill was grinning. "If they come back again, they might be surprised, 'cause I'm watching that particular part of these United States." "What do you mean, Skeet?" asked the sheriff curiously. "Just what I said, sheriff. They hadn't better come back and start grabbing wire again." "That watching," said the sheriff. "It might be a long job." "Yeah, it might. But who has more time than I have? They don't need to hurry. I like to loaf in the shade." Skeeter Bill and Fuzzy left the office and went up the street. The little cattleman was grimly serious. He said, "What ya tell him that for, Skeet?" "Well, it's true, Fuzzy. True, shucks, you ain't going to watch that waterhole." Skeeter stopped short and looked down at Fuzzy. "Who's going to stop me, you?" he asked. Fuzzy shoved his hands deep in his pockets and glared up at Skeeter Bill. "You ain't trying to antagonize me, are ya?" he asked. "I'm telling ya to stay down on your own level. Don't contradict a grown man, Fuzzy. I'm going to watch that waterhole." Fuzzy cuffed his old sombrero over one eye and spat into the dusty street. "Well, if ya are," he said complainingly, "why tell everybody what ya are going to do? That ain't using good sense." "I don't care who knows it, Fuzzy. That way, I won't have to shoot some innocent friend of mine. I'd hate that." "Your logic," declared Fuzzy, "is as uneven as a corduroy bridge over a rock pile. If they know yo are watching, they won't come out there." "And the fence don't get torn down again," added Skeeter. "Yuh have got me beat," sighed Fuzzy. "When yuh left for Texas, yuh was at least half-witted, but yuh deteriorated badly." Skeeter Bill's eyes twinkled. "I like Bane crazy," he said. "It makes thinking so easy on the head. And another thing, Fuzzy, when yuh are crazy, nobody can figure out why yuh do crazy things." "Meb it's the heat," sighed Fuzzy. "I dunno, I reckon we better go back to the ranch where Meb Emmy can talk some sense into your empty head, Skeet." They went back to the ranch and Fuzzy told his wife what Skeeter Bill insisted on doing. To his surprise, she said, "Well, I think that is just lovely of him." "You-you-you-a, why sure it is," agreed Fuzzy. "You ain't ailin' nowhere, are ya, Emmy?" "Why?" "Well, I dunno, I just thought, oh, well, let it lay. He wants a couple blankets, a pair of overalls, a shirt, and an old hat. What's he going to do, impersonate an Injun?" "I dunno, Emmy. If ya want my opinion, I'd say." "I don't, Fuzzy," interrupted Aunt Emma sharply. "If Skeeter wants something, get it for him." "Yes, I'm sure. Bane, as you both act crazy, maybe I'm the one that's plum loco. I dunno." It was after dark when Skeeter Bill rode away from the Bar D Ranch House, blankets and clothes tied behind his saddle. He also carried some donuts, a tin cup, and a canteen of cold water. He refused to say what he intended doing out there, just grinned. He did not ride up to the spring, but tied his horse in a mesquite thicket and walked the last 200 yards in the brush. The brush crowded in fairly close to the spring, but to the north was a spread of open country, covered only with knee-high growth. Near the spring was a pile of old posts, left over from the fencing. Skeeter scouted the country fairly well, but it was too dark for him to see any considerable distance. He cut some brush and sat down behind the pile of posts, working in the dark. Skeeter was not an artist, and his creation wouldn't even have fooled a wary crowd, but from a distance it might be mistaken for a man. The neck and head was a broken piece of fence post, to which he tied a stick, over which he fitted the old coat. After due deliberation, he fastened it into the post pile, with only the head and shoulders showing above the pile. Then he draped the overalls over the posts, giving the right effect for anyone viewing the spring from the south side. Skeeter did not have light enough to look it over critically. Then he took his blankets back in the mesquite, found an opening, and stretched out for the night, looking up at the stars. "This is Tuesday night," he said half aloud, "and Bill's birthday is Saturday. Maybe I'm seven kinds of a darned fool, but I ain't quittin' on Bill's druthers until I have to quit." Skeeter Bill's range training had taught him to awaken at any unusual sound, but he slept right through until the light of a false dawn painted the hills for a few minutes. It was cold up there in the brush. He watched the real dawn spread slowly across the divide, sending streamers of color onto the high points around the valley. He sat up in his blankets, buckled on his gun belt, and drew in deep breaths of the morning air. Suddenly he jerked to his knees, flinging the blankets aside. From somewhere, fairly close, came the whip-like crack of a rifle. Twice more it blasted, the echoes clattering back from the hills. Skeeter Bill was on his feet, gun in hand, hunched low. Then he went swiftly out along the brush to where he could see the spring and the pile of posts. His dummy was piled up at the foot of the post pile, the hat 6 feet away, Roman four. Cautiously, Skeeter lifted his head. The shots had come from the north, and Skeeter caught sight of something moving. It was a man or men on horseback. Skeeter's view was only momentary, but Skeeter Bill was not being fooled by anybody. He stayed right there for at least 15 minutes. There was not a sound. Several cows drifted in from the south and began drinking. Skeeter Bill walked out and looked at his dummy. One bullet had hit the hat, gone through the thin piece of fence post, mushroomed badly, and blown a hole 5 inches across at the front of the old hat. Another bullet had struck about a foot lower on the post and had split it into two pieces. The bullet hole was a foot below the top of the collar. The third bullet had missed. "Mighty good shootin' in that light," said Skeeter Bill, his face grim. Either of those bullets would have blasted the life out of a man. Skeeter Bill took the coat, hat, and overalls. He threw them on his blankets before starting up the slope. He was careful as he went up through the brush. The killer might not be quite satisfied with his own convictions and come back to verify them. Bill worked his way slowly, watching the ground. He had gone about 100 yards when he found where a boot heel had cut into the dirt. Then he found where a horse had been tied and more boot prints. It was not difficult for Skeeter Bill to backtrack those high heel tracks because the man had made no attempt to disguise his trail. Finally, he found the spot where the man had rested, waiting for daylight, and here he discovered 3 empty brass hulls where the man's rifle had flung them. They were of .30-30 caliber and of a well-known brand. Skeeter looked them over carefully and put them in his pocket. Then he got down on his hands and knees, examining every inch of the dirt around where the man had waited. He rolled and smoked a cigarette before going back to his blankets, which he rolled up with the bullet-marked clothes, and went to his horse. Breakfast was almost ready at the ranch house as Skeeter dismounted and carried his bundle up to the house. Fuzzy greeted him at the door. Skeeter Bill merely unrolled the bundle, handed the hat to Fuzzy for examination, and held up the coat for him to look through. Fuzzy squinted at Skeeter, his jaw sagging a little. "I made up a dummy," said Skeeter, "and that's what they done to it. 3 shots, 2 of them dead center." Aunt Emma and the 2 cowboys came in to look at the remains, and they all stood around, solemn-faced. Fuzzy said, "That kind of ruins my appetite for breakfast, Skeet." "Dead center twice," breathed Len Riggs. "How far, Skeet?" "At least 100 yards and an awful bad light, too." "Breakfast is ready," said Aunt Emma soberly. There was little conversation at breakfast. For once in her life, Aunt Emma had no suggestions. This was a serious business. When they had finished, Skeeter and Fuzzy stood outside together. Fuzzy said, "Skeet, you must have been looking for something like this, or y'all wouldn't have made up that dummy." Skeeter Bill smiled slowly. "Just a hunch, Fuzzy, a hunch that worked out." "I'm still fighting my hat," said Fuzzy. "You mean to say that they want water so bad that they're willing to murder to keep that spring unfenced?" Skeeter shook his head slowly. "I don't, Fuzzy. This deal goes back a couple years, I believe. Somebody don't want Skeeter Bill Sarg in circulation." "Who you are? You mean they're gunning for you, Skeet?" "They knew I was watching that water hole, Fuzzy, and they believed I was dumb enough to set on that post pile. My hunch is that the water ain't got a thing to do with it. Fuzzy Davis' eyes held a strained, nervous expression as he tried to get the situation straight in his own mind. It was difficult to puzzle out anyone's reasons for wanting to kill Skeeter Bill. Finally, he said, "I don't save the deal, Skeet. You ain't had no trouble with anybody around here. Shucks, you just got here. Take a look at that old hat," said Skeeter soberly, "and don't forget they thought my head was inside it." Skeeter Bill wanted to go to town, so Fuzzy went with him. They tied their horses to the rail in front of the general store where Skeeter wanted to buy more tobacco. Emery Van Ness, the old merchant, shook hands warmly with Skeeter Bill and sold him the tobacco. "I heard you was in town, Skeeter," he said. "Going to stay with us for a while, I hope?" "Ya can't never tell about me," replied Skeeter Bill. "I'm a tumbleweed, Emery." Skeeter's eyes swept over the supply of rifle and revolver ammunition on a shelf behind him, but did not see the brand of rifle cartridges he had found at the waterhole. "Do ya need some shells?" asked Fuzzy. "I've got plenty for my six-shooter," replied Skeeter. "Have you got a 30-30, Fuzzy?" "Yeah, I've got one, but the firin' pin is busted. Been laying off to get it fixed, but there ain't no gunsmith around here." Skeeter mentioned the brand of the shells he had found at the waterhole, but Van Ness shook his head slowly. "We ain't had none of them for a couple months, got some ordered. Sam Keenan bought the last box I had. Them others are the same thing. In fact, I have more calls for them." They left the store, and Skeeter Bill drifted down to the New York Chop House to say hello to Margie Edwards, but she was not in evidence. Another woman was waiting on the tables. Shorty Hale, the owner, came out from the kitchen, his face just a bit sheepish. Skeeter Bill asked about Margie. Shorty said, "She quit the job last night." "Yeah, did she get a better job, Shorty?" She didn't say, just left." Skeeter went down to the little house and found Mrs. Edwards laboring over a washtub. "Shorty told me you quit the restaurant, Margie," Skeeter said. "Shorty must be getting polite," she said. "He fired me." Skeeter looked sharply at her. "What for, Margie?" "I don't know, we didn't have any trouble. Everything was going along all right, but when my shift was finished, he told me that I didn't need to come back." She brushed a lock of hair off her forehead. "I don't know what I am going to do now." Skeeter Bill turned abruptly and left the house, his long legs taking long strides as he went back to the restaurant. Shorty came out to the counter and found Skeeter Bill waiting for him. The expression on Skeeter's face was not pleasant as he said quietly, "Why did you lie to me, Shorty Hale? She didn't quit." Shorty swallowed painfully but tried to bluster. "After all, well, she—" "Go ahead, Shorty. What did she do or say?" "Nothing," admitted Shorty miserably. "Listen, Skeeter, this is between me and you. I don't own this place. I work here. The owner said to get rid of her and I had to do it. Honest, I did." "Who owns it, Shorty?" Shorty Hale shook his head. "I can't tell ya, Skeeter. If I did, I'd lose my job. I'm supposed to own the place. Don't tell anybody that I don't. I just had to tell you." "Sam Keenan?" asked Skeeter quietly. Shorty blinked rapidly. "I can't tell ya, Skeeter. It's my job." "Shorty, I want an honest answer. Does Sam Keenan try to hang around Margie Edwards?" I hear he does," whispered Shorty. "I don't reckon it's any secret. He kinda liked her before Hootie got sent up. It ain't none of my business, but I heard that he asked her to get a divorce and marry him only a week ago, and she refused. She's kinda foolish. Sam could give her everything and take care of them two kids." "Much obliged, Shorty. I won't mention it." I hope you don't. I need this job, Skeeter." Fuzzy Davis was waiting for Skeeter Bill in front of the general store. Skeeter said, "Fuzzy, let's ride out to the Tumblin' K and see Sam Keenan. We can cut across the hills from there." Grumpily, Fuzzy said it was all right with him, but wondered why Skeeter wanted to go to the Tumblin' K. In fact, he was trying hard to understand this tall, long-legged cowpuncher who had always been more or less of an enigma. On the way out, Skeeter said, "Fuzzy, did you ever know that Sam Keenan was trying to shine around Margie Edwards?" "Well, I've heard he was. Never paid no attention myself. Why?" "I just wondered," replied Skeeter Bill. Sam Keenan's place was a regular bachelor ranch house with very few refining touches. There was a long, rickety porch. A man was sitting on the steps working over a gun. He was Arizona Ashley, who had been Keenan's cook for years, a thin, wiry old-timer. He shook hands violently with Skeeter Bill and Fuzzy and invited them to sit in the shade. Ashley said, "Sam went to Silver Springs yesterday afternoon and the boys are all working. Sam'll probably be back late this afternoon. How have you been, Skeeter?" "Just fine, Arizona. Y'all looking well." "Yeah, I'm all right. What are ya doing getting ready for a war?" asked Fuzzy. Arizona grinned. "No, I hope I ain't, Fuzzy. The boys are a loose kickin' about the way this gun shoots, so I thought I'd tinker it a little. Just getting ready to try it out. See that tin can on top of the mesquite out there, Skeet? See if you can hit it." Skeeter took the rifle, cuddled the butt against his shoulder, and carefully squeezed the trigger. The tin can jumped into the air and disappeared. Skeeter Bill levered out the empty shell and handed the gun to Arizona, who said, "See anything wrong with that gun, Skeet? It shoots where ya hold it, Arizona. That's what I always tell the boys, it ain't the gun, it's you." Skeet always could shoot the eye out of a gnat, said Fuzzy, and never lift its eyebrow, added Arizona soberly. "It's just a gift, that's all. Some folks never can learn. Are ya staying at Fuzzy's place, Skeet?" "Yeah, for a few days. I'm sort of a drifter, Arizona." "I know ya are, and I'm sorry, Skeet, it don't pay. I used to want to keep moving, but I finally got smart and I says to me, Arizony, y'are getting old. A rolling stone gathers no moss. You get a good, steady job and stick with it. And that's what I've done. I've been here 18 years and look what I've got." "What have you got?" asked Skeeter Bill. "A steady job and I only owe $3.06. You never can tell how I'd be fixed if I kept on drifting. You have made a lot of sacrifices to get where you are too," remarked Fuzzy. "I remember when you didn't have anything. That's before I got smart, Fuzzy." Declining to wait and eat supper at the Tumbling K, Skeeter Bill and Fuzzy cut across the hills to the bar. D. Aunt Emma was a little worried. She said, "After what happened this morning, I'd naturally worry." "Nobody wants to hurt Fuzzy," said Skeeter Bill. "They shot up a dummy, didn't they?" "I resent that, Emmy," protested Fuzzy. "Meb, the heat has affected your good manners. Set down and fan yourself." "I think I will," she smiled. "I've got the mulligan simmering on the stove and the biscuits ready to shoot into the oven. That old stove is hotter than what sinners have facing them. Any news in Yellow Butte?" "We didn't find any," sighed Fuzzy, fanning himself with his hat. "At least I didn't know about Skeet. I seen him come from the New York chop house, walkin' like the devil was prodding him. He was gone a few minutes and came back faster'n that. Into the chop house he goes, stays a minute or two, and comes out. Keepin' cases on me, eh, Skeeter Bill? I'd like to ask you a question, Fuzzy. Did you ever hear that Sam Keenan owns the New York chop house?" "Sam Keenan? No, I never did, Skeet. Where'd you get that idea?" "Things kind of come to me," replied Skeeter Bill. "How is Margie Edwards?" "Asked Aunt Emma. She got fired," replied Skeeter Bill. "Shorty told me she quit and she said she was fired, so I put it up to Shorty and he said that he didn't own the cafe but took orders from the owner and that the owner had told him to fire Margie. Aw, I think he's trying to crawl out of it, Skeet. If I thought he was, I'd drown him in his own soup." "By golly, that's it," exclaimed Fuzzy. "What's it?" asked Skeeter Bill quickly. "A sensible use for Shorty Hale's soup. At that, it might be too thin to drown a man. You can breathe it without difficulty." "Fuzzy," exclaimed Aunt Emma, "that is ridiculous. But Skeeter, what on earth gave you the idea that Sam Keenan might own that restaurant?" "I dunno," sighed Skeeter Bill. "I suppose I had a hunch." "You and your hunches," snorted Fuzzy. "Go look at that old hat, Fuzzy, and the back of the coat. Yeah, I reckon ya do have flashes of intelligence. Sometimes I get smart, too." "When?" asked Aunt Emma soberly. Fuzzy turned to Skeeter. "Ain't it like a woman, a lose tryin' to pin ya down to an exact date? And never gettin' an answer," said Aunt Emma, heading back for the kitchen. Ollie Ashley and Len Riggs wanted to go to Yellow Butte, and Skeeter Bill decided to go with them, against the protests of Fuzzy Davis, who declared that Skeeter might run into trouble, especially in the dark. "Trouble is my middle name, Fuzzy," Skeeter Bill told him. "I'll be all right. Besides that, I've got two good men with me." "Them too," scoffed Fuzzy. "Lot of help they'd be. I can snap my fingers and make 'em both go for cover." "When, for instance?" asked Ollie soberly. "Ah, yar, just like Emmy, a lose askin' for dates. Go ahead and get killed. Might improve the country, I dunno." Ollie and Len tied their horses at the 7-Up Saloon, but Skeeter rode straight down to the Edwards house. He tied his horse to the rickety fence and went up to the lighted house. Young Bill came to the door to welcome Skeeter Bill. Margie and Nellie were reading a book. They were delighted to see Skeeter, Margie said. "You went out of here so fast yesterday that I had a feeling you were mad at me." "Shucks, I never get mad at my friends," said Skeeter with a smile. "I just had something on my mind at that time." They sat and talked for an hour before the two children went to bed. After they were gone, Skeeter Bill asked Margie if she knew who owned the New York chop house. "Shorty Hale," she replied. "Shorty says he don't, and that he had orders from the owner to fire you." "That's funny, Skeeter. Everybody believes that Shorty owns it. And if there were another owner, why would he want to fire me? I haven't done anything, not that I know about." Skeeter Bill shook his head, hunched forward in an old rocker. Then he looked at her and said quietly, "Margie, I don't want to pry into your private affairs, but I'd like to know if Sam Keenan ever made love to you." Margie Edwards' laugh sounded forced, but she said, "It wouldn't be anything new if he did, Skeeter. Wanted to marry ya, eh?" Yes, but I wouldn't marry him, Skeeter. I told him I was waiting for Hootie to come back, and he said, well, he said I'd have a mighty long wait. I told him I'd get along all right. Were Hootie and Sam Keenan good friends? Well, I don't know if they were good friends, but they certainly weren't enemies, Skeeter. But what is all this about? You ask questions like a lawyer. I'm trying to make 2 and 2 equal 6, Margie. I kind of feel that I've woke up some sleepin' dogs in Roadrunner Valley, and they ain't happy about having their sleep interrupted. I'll be on my way to the ranch, I reckon, but I'll be seeing ya again, I hope. Be careful, she warned. I don't know what you are trying to do, but it is probably something dangerous. I like it, he said, smiling at her. Don't worry, Margie, this is only Tuesday. He closed the door behind him, leaving her wondering what he meant about this only being Tuesday. It was very dark out at the old fence, and Skeeter Bill almost had to find his horse by feel rather than by sight. As he slid the reins over the horse's head, something told him that danger was near him. There had not been a sound, but some sixth sense warned him. Instantly, he ducked low, intending to slide under the horse, but a hissing rope slashed across his face, jerking tight over the bridge of his nose, and he was yanked backwards into the dirt. The horse whirled in against the fence when Skeeter Bill went down, and a voice snapped a curse. Skeeter came down on one hip and elbow, and for a fraction of a second the rope slacked. In that fraction, Skeeter Bill drew his gun and shot blindly, trying to use that tightening rope as a guide. A man yelled sharply, and the rope fell away. Quickly, Bill jerked the rope from his eyes, going flat, gun ready. A shot blasted out, and the whirling horse went completely over Skeeter Bill but did not strike him. He heard a man running away along the fence as he got to his feet and caught his horse. Margie called from the doorway, Skeeter Bill, Skeeter, are you hurt? I'm all right, Margie, he called. Somebody was just fooling. See ya later. The two kids crowded in behind their mother, questioning her about the shooting, but she was unable to tell them what happened, except that Skeeter Bill said he was all right. I'll betcha he's a ring-tailed wolf in a fight, declared young Bill proudly. Look at them shoulders. Man, I hope I grow up to be as good a man as he is. Mom, I bet Dad would like that. Yes, I believe he would, Bill. Now go back to bed and forget it. Skeeter Bill can take care of himself. Skeeter rode back to the bar. D. Fuzzy and his wife were still up. Ollie and Len had already returned home and were in the bunkhouse. Skeeter's nose was skinned and there was a rope burn over his left eye. He told them what happened. Fuzzy said, Skeet, things like that ain't no joke. I ain't jockin', Fuzzy. It's got me puzzled tryin' to figure why they tried to rope me. What their idea was, I don't know, unless they figured on dragging me around. Anyway, it turned out all right. I shot once, but I don't reckon I hit anybody. Come to think of it, said Skeeter thoughtfully, I heard a man yelp. Well, that's the doggonettest thing I ever heard, exclaimed the little cowman. Skeet, can't ya tell us why they're aimin' to ease you off this mortal coil? Your guess is almost as good as mine, Fuzzy. Yeah, almost, said Fuzzy dryly. Emmy, why don't you get into this discussion? Ain't you got no ideas? Aunt Emma shook her head and almost lost her glasses. I reckon we might as well go to bed, sighed Fuzzy, unless ya want to stay up, Skeet, so as not to disappoint em if they come out here to finish up on ya. No, I think they're too disappointed to try again tonight. They were getting ready for bed when they heard horses coming up to the house. Fuzzy went over by the door, waiting for the visitors to knock when a voice called. Fuzzy, this is Al Creedon. The law is among us, whispered Fuzzy and opened the door. It was the sheriff with his deputy, Muddy Pool. Skeeter Bill was standing in the doorway to the kitchen and called a greeting to the officers. Ridden late, ain't ya, Al? Asked Fuzzy. Kinda. Glad y'are home, Skeeter. We hoped you'd be. What's eaten ya, Al? Asked Skeeter curiously. About what happened tonight at Edward's house, Skeet. Several of us heard the two shots fired, but we had a hard time where it was. Mrs. Edwards told us that it happened in front of her place and that you said you was all right. That's right, admitted Skeeter. Somebody tried to rope me in the dark. He still got rope burns on his eye and nose, said Aunt Emma. The sheriff nodded. Skeeter, he said, did you know a feller named Dutch Held? Skeeter Bill shook his head. I don't believe I ever did, Al. I've heard of him, said Fuzzy. They say he's a bad boy. Was, said the sheriff. Skeet, how many times did you shoot? Once. Somebody shot at me too, just 2 shots fired. I've got a kind of hunch that I hit somebody. So have I, said the sheriff quietly. Skeeter Bill looked sharply at the sheriff. What do you mean, Al? He asked curiously. Where was your horse when you started to climb on him? Why, right in front of the gate. Uh-huh, that makes the corner of the fence about 20 feet away. Well, Skeeter, we found Dutch Held at the corner of the fence, dead as a doorknob. He had 1 bullet through his right arm. In fact, it busted his arm at the elbow. The other bullet was in the back of his head. That one killed him instantly. Skeeter Bill stared thoughtfully at the floor. That other shot had not been fired at him, but into the back of Dutch Held's head. Fuzzy said, "It don't make sense, Al." "What do you think, Skeeter?" asked Muddy Pool. "There's only one thing to think, Muddy," replied Skeeter Bill. The man who was with Dutch Held didn't want to fool around with a crippled man, so he blasted him down. "That would be a terrible thing to do," exclaimed Aunt Emma. "Would ya mind doing a little talking, Skeet?" asked the sheriff. Skeeter Bill smiled slowly. "Go ahead," he said. "I ain't got no favorite subjects, so select your poison, Al. One of the boys from this spread intimated that somebody tried to murder you this morning, Skeeter. They tried it again tonight. It just happens that I'm the sheriff of this county and things like that are my business. What's your opinion?" "I agree with ya, sheriff. Go right ahead and find out who is trying to kill me. It's all right with me." "You mean you don't know?" "Sheriff," replied Skeeter Bill seriously, "if I knew sure, ya don't think I'd be waiting for them to try it again, do ya?" "Like I told ya on the way out here, Al, we're wastin' our time," said Muddy Pool. The sheriff sighed and got to his feet. "I reckon ya're right, Muddy. I hope I see you again, Skeeter." "That's a cinch," said Skeeter soberly. "You go ahead and hope that I can see you." After the two officers had gone, Skeeter Bill said, "Fuzzy, what do you know about this Dutch Held?" "Well, he was a bad boy, Skeet. Suspected of rustlin', horse stealin', smugglin', finally murder, shot a feller in a holdup in Yuma. Dutch used to be around here once in a while when he worked for the Double Circle 7 north of Silver Springs. I hadn't heard anything about him lately." "Much obliged, Fuzzy. Well, folks, I reckon we can go to bed and get a good sleep. I think that somebody is awful disappointed over tonight's work, and it ain't me. Good night, folks." "You better say your prayers," advised Aunt Emma. Skeeter grinned at her and said, "Aunt Emma, how about you doing it for me? My prayers never seem to go high enough to do any good." "I'd like that," said Fuzzy seriously. "It'll give her less time to implore the Lord to make me a better man. I dunno who she's holding up as an example." V.I. Although Fuzzy went to Yellow Butte with Skeeter Bill next day, he was not enthused over it at all. They talked with the sheriff, who told them that the inquest would be held Saturday forenoon, delayed because Dr. Boardman had to go to Crescent City on business. Skeeter Bill lost no time in going down to see the doctor, who was ready to drive away. "I wanted to ask you a question, Doc," said Skeeter Bill. "On the day or two after Hootie Edwards was shot, was you called on to treat any sort of a gunshot wound?" The gray-haired doctor shook his head. "No, I'm sure I wasn't, Sarg. I would have remembered it, I'm sure." Skeeter Bill thanked him and went back to the main street where he found Fuzzy Davis and told him he was going to Silver Springs. "I'll be back for that inquest," he told Fuzzy. "Don't worry, I'll be here." "Who's worrying?" demanded the little cowman. "You must think you're awful important. Go ahead and get yourself shot. Silver Springs is a awful nice place to die. I'll tell Emmy to pray for ya. Every little helps." Skeeter flashed a smile. "Much obliged, Fuzzy." It was late Friday night when Skeeter Bill came back to the Bar D Ranch. Aunt Emma fixed supper for him, and Fuzzy did a lot of hinting, but Skeeter did not mention why he went to Silver Springs. Aunt Emma said, "Fuzzy and I have to be at the inquest tomorrow, and they said you've got to be there, too. I saw Margie Edwards, and they've told her to be present and bring the two kids." Skeeter Bill smiled over his coffee. "We'll have a regular old-timers reunion," he said. "Anything new, Fuzzy?" "Nothing unusual. I went out to Hangin Rock Waterhole, but the fence is all right yet. Nobody shot at ya in Silver Springs?" "No, they treated me all right. Nice place over there." "You can have it," replied Fuzzy. "Yar going to the inquest, ain't ya? If I live, yeah." "My goodness," exclaimed Aunt Emma. "You ain't figuring on getting killed between now and then, are ya, Skeet?" "Livin' in a benighted land like this, Aunt Emma, it don't do for anybody to plan too far ahead." Saturday was always a big day in Yellow Butte. It was the shopping day for almost everybody in Roadrunner Valley, and they not only brought their kids, but their dogs as well. By 10 o'clock, all the available hitchrack space was taken. Fuzzy and Aunt Emma tied their horses behind the sheriff's office, along with Skeeter's horse. They held the inquest in the courtroom at the courthouse, with Dr. Boardman, the coroner, officiating. The room was filled, long before the inquest was called to order. Mrs. Edwards and her two children, Fuzzy and Aunt Emma and Skeeter Bill, all being witnesses, were accorded a special number of seats at the front. From his position, Skeeter Bill could look over most of the crowd. Many of them he had known for a long time. In the front row of seats, he could see Slim Lacey and Sam Keenan. Behind Lacey was Johnny Greer, Keenan's foreman, and some of his men. In the selection of a jury, Sam Keenan was chosen, along with five other men of Yellow Butte. Sheriff Al Creedon and his deputy, Muddy Pool, had seats near the coroner, basking in the gaze of the proletariat. Dr. Boardman opened the proceedings, outlining the circumstances of the finding of Dutch Held's body and giving the cause of his death. "In my opinion," stated the doctor, "someone held a .45 almost against the back of Dutch Held's head and fired the fatal shot, the gun held so closely that it burned his hair." He waited for that fact to soak into the crowd and then said, "We will now call Skeeter Bill Sarg to the stand." The coroner clumsily administered the oath for Skeeter Bill to tell the truth, and Skeeter swore that he would. Skeeter took the chair, stretching his long legs. He shoved his holstered gun to a handy position. The coroner said, "It is hardly proper to wear a gun on the witness stand." "Who is liable to have more need of one, Doc?" asked Skeeter, and the crowd laughed. The doctor nodded and said, "Go ahead and tell the jury what happened in front of Mrs. Edwards' home." Skeeter told them in detail of the attack on him, how he got out of it, and said that he didn't know anyone had been killed. "I thought that shot was fired at me," he confessed, "until the sheriff came out to the bar D and told me what happened. I understand that you did not know Dutch Held, and that you do not know why the attack was made on you," said the doctor. "I never met Dutch Held, but I deny the last statement, Doc." The doctor stared at Skeeter for several moments and asked quietly, "Do you mean to say you know why you were attacked?" "I do," replied Skeeter Bill coldly. "They tried it before, Doc, but they shot a dummy instead of me. It was good shooting, too, but ya can't kill a fence post, even if it is wearing a hat. Ya see," he continued after a pause, "the dry gulcher made a mistake. He never picked up the empty shells from his rifle. Almost every rifle leaves its own mark on a shell. Meb, it's the way the firing pin hits the primer, a scratch on the shell, always in the same place. Doc, I found those shells and I shot a gun just to get the empty shell and they match. But wait a minute, this deal is older'n just a few days. It goes back to the conviction of Hootie Edwards. Yussie, gents, a bartender put dope into Hootie's whiskey that night, and that's why Hootie didn't know what happened. It's a cinch that no doped man could have robbed that bank. That man had to be cold sober. The sheriff swapped shots with the bank robber that morning, and the sheriff was sure he hit the man. Gentlemen, he did, but it wasn't Hootie Edwards. The man he hit went to a doctor for treatment of a gunshot wound next day, but not to Doc Boardman. He was scared to do that. There was a long silence in that big room. Every eye was on Skeeter Bill, waiting for him to continue. He moved his long legs, pulling his feet in close to his chair. Then he said in a brittle voice, "Slim Lacey, keep your hands in sight." Suddenly Skeeter Bill flung himself sideways, landing on his knees, 6 feet away from the witness chair, just as a bullet smashed into the back of the chair. Johnny Greer, hunched behind Slim Lacey, had drawn a gun, unnoticed by anybody, except Skeeter Bill, who had seen his shoulder action. Skeeter Bill's gun flamed from his kneeling position, the bullet slashing across Lacey's shoulder, but centering Greer. The room was instantly in an uproar. Keenan in the jury box flung a man away from in front of him, giving him room to shoot. He fairly screamed, "You dirty bloodhound, I'll—" Skeeter's gun flamed again, and Keenan went to his knees over empty chairs, flinging his gun ahead of him. Men were clawing at each other, crashing over chairs, trying to get away from the line of fire. Someone yelled, "Slim Lacey is getting away, stop him." There was no chance to get through that milling crowd. Skeeter Bill whirled to the front windows. They were not built to be opened, but Skeeter hurled a chair through one of them and went out onto the sidewalk as Slim Lacey ran from the entrance. The gambler saw Skeeter Bill, whirled, gun in hand, but caught his heel and went flat on his back, firing one shot straight into the air, before Skeeter's toe caught the gun and kicked it halfway across the street. Men were piling out of the courthouse. Skeeter yanked the gambler to his feet. Al Creedon and Muddy Pool had fought their way loose from the crowd and came running. One of the men was the gray-haired prosecutor, who had sent Hootie Edwards to the penitentiary, and his face was just a little white. "I'll talk," panted the frightened Lacey, cringing at the expression of the faces around him. I didn't kill anybody. I gave Hootie the dope in his drink, but Keenan paid me to do it. I put it in his last drink when he said he was going home." "Keep going," said Skeeter Bill tensely. The gambler blurted out his confession hastily in a high-pitched voice. "Sam Keenan was broke and he robbed the bank and put the deadwood on Hootie Edwards. He wanted Edwards' wife. Then Keenan bought the 7-Up in the New York Chop House. I didn't own the saloon, but everybody thought I did." "Why did they try to kill me?" asked Skeeter Bill. "Because they thought you knew too much. They wanted to make Fuzzy Davis sell the bar D. That's why Keenan hired Greer, and Greer was an old bunkie of Dutch Held. Greer was the best shot in the state. He says he shot Dutch accidentally when Dutch ducked in front of him. He was trying to kill you, Skeeter, that's all I know. But I didn't murder anybody, honest, I did." Muddy Pool snapped handcuffs on Slim Lacey and headed for the jail with him. Keenan wasn't dead, but badly hurt. They carried him outside, he was conscious. He said to Al Credon and the prosecutor, Mrs. Edwards can have the tumblin' K, it's hers. Where, Skeeter Bill? Right here, Sam, replied the sheriff, pushing the tall cowpuncher forward. Sam Keenan scowled up at Skeeter Bill, his voice weakening as he said, You win, Sarg. But I'd like to live long enough to kill Doc Higgins over at Silver Springs for telling you that he doctored a bullet wound on me the day they got Hootie. Skeeter Bill hunched down lower, his face grim as he said, You're wrong, Sam. Doc didn't tell me that. You see, he wasn't coming back to Silver Springs until today, so I couldn't wait. Keenan blinked painfully as he realized what had happened. Then he said, But you found that matchin' 30-30 shell, Skeeter. No, I didn't, Sam, denied Skeeter. I tried to, but the blamed extractor flung the shell through a crack in the porch floor, and I didn't have a chance to shoot twice. What did you have? Whispered Keenan. All I had was a rawhide Honda, which I found at Fuzzy's spring after the wires was torn loose. It's got a JG mark done with a hot wire. That sounded like Johnny Greer, and that's all I had, except the knowledge that when a man's guilty, he'll fall for a lie, and you was guilty, Sam. Skeeter Bill turned away. Fuzzy, Aunt Emma, Margie Edwards, and her two children were talking excitedly. Fuzzy said, We'll have Hootie back here in two shakes, I tell ya. You'll own the tumblin' K, too. Woo ye. Ol' Skeet Shore must up that rat. Nest in a hurry, didn't ya, Skeet? I just shook hands with Dan Houck. We was both so darned excited that we forgot to be enemies. He invited me to have a drink, but Emmy was listening. Well, darn your long hide, why don't ya say something? Skeeter Bill smiled slowly, his eyes shifting from face to face, until he was looking at young Bill Edwards, his blue eyes slightly red, cheeks just a trifle tear-stained. His eyes were just a bit wide as he looked at Skeeter Bill. Skeeter Bill said very softly, Happy birthday, Bill. It sure is, whispered young Bill, and Skeeter walked away, yanking his hat down over his eyes. Transcriber's note. This story appeared in the fall 1948 issue of Giant Western magazine. End of the project GUTNBRGEBOOK Skeeter Bill comes to town asterisk. Updated editions will replace the previous one. The old editions will be renamed. Creating the works from print editions not protected by U.S. copyright. Law means that no one owns a United States copyright in these works, so the Foundation and you can copy and distribute it in the United States without permission and without paying copyright royalties. Special rules set forth in the general terms of use part of this license apply to copying and distributing project. Gutenberg trademark electronic works to protect the project GUTMBRGTM. Concept and trademark. Project Gutenberg is a registered trademark and may not be used if you charge for an ebook except by following the terms of the trademark license, including paying royalties for use of the Project Gutenberg trademark. If you do not charge anything for copies of this ebook, complying with the trademark license is very easy. You may use this ebook for nearly any purpose, such as creation of derivative works, reports, performances, and research. Project Gutenberg ebooks may be modified and printed and given away. You may do practically anything in the United States with ebooks not protected by U.S. copyright law. Redistribution is subject to the trademark license, especially commercial redistribution. Start full license. The full Project GUTMBRGTM license. Please read this before you distribute or use this work to protect the Project Gutenberg trademark mission of promoting the free distribution of electronic works by using or distributing this work or any other work associated in any way with the phrase Project Gutenberg. You agree to comply with all the terms of the full Project Gutenberg license available with this file or online at www.gutenberg.org/license. Section 1. General Terms of Use and Redistributing Project Gutenberg Electronic Works. 1A. By reading or using any part of this Project Gutenberg electronic work, you indicate that you have read, understand, agree to, and accept all the terms of this license and intellectual property. Trademark Copyright Agreement. If you do not agree to abide by all the terms of this agreement, you must cease using and return or destroy all copies of Project Gutenberg electronic works in your possession. If you paid a fee for obtaining a copy of or access to a Project Gutenberg electronic work and you do not agree to be bound by the terms of this agreement, you may obtain a refund from the person or entity to whom you paid the fee as set forth in paragraph 1E8, 1B. Project Gutenberg is a registered trademark. It may only be used on or associated in any way with an electronic work by people who agree to be bound by the terms of this agreement. There are a few things that you can do with most Project Gutenberg electronic works, even without complying with the full terms of this agreement. C. Paragraph 1C below. There are a lot of things you can do with Project Gutenberg electronic works if you follow the terms of this agreement and help preserve free future access to Project Gutenberg electronic works. See paragraph 1E below, 1C. The Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation, the Foundation, or PGLAF, owns a compilation copyright in the collection of Project Gutenberg electronic works, nearly all the individual works in the collection are in the public domain in the United States. If an individual work is unprotected by copyright law in the United States and you are located in the United States, we do not claim a right to prevent you from copying, distributing, performing, displaying, or creating derivative works based on the work as long as all references to Project Gutenberg are removed. Of course, we hope that you will support the Project Gutenberg mission of promoting free access to electronic works by freely sharing Project Gutenberg works in compliance with the terms of this agreement for keeping the Project Gutenberg name associated with the work. You can easily comply with the terms of this agreement by keeping this work in the same format with its attached full Project Gutenberg license when you share it without charge with others. 1D, the copyright laws of the place where you are located also govern what you can do with this work. Copyright laws in most countries are in a constant state of change. If you are outside the United States, check the laws of your country in addition to the terms of this agreement before downloading, copying, displaying, performing, distributing, or creating derivative works based on this work or any other Project Gutenberg work. The Foundation makes no representations concerning the copyright status of any work in any country other than the United States. 1E. Unless you have removed all references to Project Gutenberg. 1E1. The following sentence with active links to or other immediate access to the full Project Gutenberg license must appear prominently whenever any copy of a Project Gutenberg work, any work, on which the phrase Project Gutenberg appears or with which the phrase Project Gutenberg is associated is accessed, displayed, performed, viewed, copied, or distributed. This ebook is for the use of anyone anywhere in the United States and most other parts of the world at no cost and with almost no restrictions whatsoever. You may copy it, give it away, or reuse it under the terms of the Project Gutenberg trademark license included with this ebook or online at www.gutenberg.org. If you are not located in the United States, you will have to check the laws of the country where you are located before using this ebook. 1E2. If an individual Project Gutenberg electronic work is derived from texts not protected by U.S. copyright law, does not contain a notice indicating that it is posted with permission of the copyright holder, the work can be copied and distributed to anyone in the United States without paying any fees or charges. If you are redistributing or providing access to work with the phrase Project Gutenberg associated with or appearing on the work, you must comply either with the requirements of paragraphs 1E1 through 1E7 or obtain permission for the use of the work and the Project Gutenberg trademark as set forth in paragraphs 1E8 or 1E9. 1E3. If an individual Project Gutenberg electronic work is posted with the permission of the copyright holder, your use and distribution must comply with both paragraphs 1E1 through 1E7 and any additional terms imposed by the copyright holder. Additional terms will be linked to the Project Gutenberg license for all works posted with the permission of the copyright holder found at the beginning of this work. 1E4. Do not unlink or detach or remove the full Project Gutenberg license terms from this work or any files containing a part of this work or any other work associated with Project Gutenberg. 1E5. Do not copy, display, perform, distribute, or redistribute this electronic work or any part of this electronic work without prominently displaying the sentence set forth in paragraph 1E1 with active links or immediate access to the full terms of the Project Gutenberg license. 1E6. You may convert to and distribute this work in any binary, compressed, marked up, non-proprietary or proprietary form, including any word processing or hypertext form. However, if you provide access to or distribute copies of a Project Gutenberg work in a format other than plain vanilla ASCII or other format used in the official version posted on the official Project Gutenberg website, www.gutenberg.org, you must, at no additional cost, fee, or expense, to the user provide a copy, a means of exporting a copy, or a means of obtaining a copy upon request of the work in its original plain vanilla ASCII or other form. Any alternate format must include the full Project Gutenberg license as specified in paragraph 1E1, 1E7. Do not charge a fee for access to viewing, displaying, performing, copying, or distributing any Project Gutenberg works, unless you comply with paragraph 1E8 or 1E9, 1E8. You may charge a reasonable fee for copies of or providing access to or distributing Project Gutenberg electronic works, provided that you pay a royalty fee of 20% of the gross profits you derive from the use of Project Gutenberg works calculated using the method you already use to calculate your applicable taxes. The fee is owed to the owner of the Project Gutenberg trademark, but he has agreed to donate royalties under this paragraph to the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation. Royalty payments must be paid within 60 days following each date on which you prepare or are legally required to prepare your periodic tax returns. Royalty payments should be clearly marked as such and sent to the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation at the address specified in Section 4, Information about Donations to the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation. You provide a full refund of any money paid by a user who notifies you in writing or by email within 30 days of receipt that he does not agree to the terms of the full Project Gutenberg trademark license. You must require such a user to return or destroy all copies of the works possessed in a physical medium and discontinue all use of and all access to other copies of Project Gutenberg trademark works. You provide, in accordance with paragraph 1F3, a full refund of any money paid for a work or a replacement copy if a defect in the electronic work is discovered and reported to you within 90 days of receipt of the work. You comply with all other terms of this agreement for free distribution of Project Gutenberg trademark works. 1E9. If you wish to charge a fee or distribute a Project Gutenberg trademark electronic work or group of works on different terms than are set forth in this agreement, you must obtain permission in writing from the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation, the manager of the Project Gutenberg trademark. Contact the foundation as set forth in section 3 below, 1F1F1. Project Gutenberg volunteers and employees expend considerable effort to identify, do copyright research on, transcribe, and proofread works not protected by U.S. copyright law in creating the Project Gutenberg trademark collection. Despite these efforts, Project Gutenberg trademark electronic works and the medium on which they may be stored may contain defects, such as, but not limited to, incomplete, inaccurate, or corrupt data, transcription errors, a copyright or other intellectual property infringement, a defective or damaged disk or other medium, a computer virus or computer codes that damage or cannot be read by your equipment. 1F2. Limited warranty disclaimer of damages, except for the right of replacement or refund described in paragraph 1F3, the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation, the owner of the Project Gutenberg trademark, and any other party distributing a Project Gutenberg trademark electronic work under this agreement, disclaim all liability to you for damages, costs, and expenses, including legal fees. You agree that you have no remedies for negligence, strict liability, breach of warranty, or breach of contract, except those provided in paragraph 1F3. You agree that the foundation, trademark owner, and any distributor under this agreement will not be liable to you for actual, direct, indirect, consequential, punitive, or incidental damages, even if you give notice of the possibility of such damage. 1F3. Limited right of replacement or refund. If you discover a defect in this electronic work within 90 days of receiving it, you can receive a refund of the money, if any, you paid for it by sending a written explanation to the person you received the work from. If you receive the work on a physical medium, you must return the medium with your written explanation. The person or entity that provided you with the defective work may elect to provide a replacement copy in lieu of a refund. If you receive the work electronically, the person or entity providing it to you may choose to give you a second opportunity to receive the work electronically in lieu of a refund. If the second copy is also defective, you may demand a refund in writing, without further opportunities to fix the problem. 1. F4. Except for the limited right of replacement or refund set forth. In paragraph 1 F3, this work is provided to you, as is, with no other warranties of any kind, express or implied, including but not limited to warranties of merchantability or fitness for any purpose. 1. F5. Some states do not allow disclaimers of certain implied warranties or the exclusion or limitation of certain types of damages. If any disclaimer or limitation set forth in this agreement violates the law of the state applicable to this agreement, the agreement shall be interpreted to make the maximum disclaimer or limitation permitted by the applicable state law. The invalidity or unenforceability of any provision of this agreement shall not void the remaining provisions. 1. F6. Indemnity. You agree to indemnify and hold the foundation, the trademark owner, any agent or employee of the foundation, anyone, providing copies of Project Gutenberg trademark electronic works in accordance with this agreement and any volunteers associated with the production, promotion, and distribution of Project Gutenberg trademark electronic works, harmless from all liability, costs, and expenses, including legal fees that arise directly or indirectly from any of the following which you do or cause to occur. A distribution of this, or any Project Gutenberg work, B. Alteration, modification, or additions or deletions to any Project Gutenberg work, and C. Any defect you cause. Section 2. Information about the mission of Project Gutenberg. Project Gutenberg is synonymous with the free distribution of electronic works in formats readable by the widest variety of computers, including obsolete, old, middle-aged, and new computers. It exists because of the efforts of hundreds of volunteers and donations from people in all walks of life. Volunteers and financial support to provide volunteers with the assistance they need are critical to reaching Project Gutenberg goals and ensuring that the Project Gutenberg collection will remain freely available for generations to come. In 2001, the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation was created to provide a secure and permanent future for Project Gutenberg and future generations. To learn more about the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation and how your efforts and donations can help, see Sections 3 and 4 and the Foundation Information page at www.gutenberg.org, Section 3. Information about the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation. The Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation is a nonprofit, 501(c)(3) educational corporation organized under the laws of the State of Mississippi and granted tax-exempt status by the Internal Revenue Service. The foundation's EIN, or federal tax identification, number is 64622-1541. Contributions to the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation are tax-deductible to the full extent permitted by U.S. federal laws and your state's laws. The foundation's business office is located at 41 Watchung Plaza 516, Montclair, NJ 7042, USA, plus 1-862-620-19288. Email contact links and up-to-date contact information can be found at the foundation's website and official page at www.gutenberg.org/contact. Section 4. Information about donations to the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation. Project Gutenberg trademark depends upon and cannot survive without widespread public support and donations to carry out its mission of increasing the number of public domain and licensed works that can be freely distributed in machine-readable form accessible by the widest array of equipment, including outdated equipment. Many small donations, $1 to $5,000, are particularly important to maintaining tax-exempt status with the IRS. The foundation is committed to complying with the laws regulating charities and charitable donations in all 50 states of the United States. Compliance requirements are not uniform, and it takes a considerable effort, much paperwork, and many fees to meet and keep up with these requirements. We do not solicit donations in locations where we have not received written confirmation of compliance. To send donations or determine the status of compliance for any particular state, visit www.gutenberg.org/donate. While we cannot and do not solicit contributions from states where we have not met the solicitation requirements, we know of no prohibition against accepting unsolicited donations from donors in such states who approach us with offers to donate. International donations are gratefully accepted, but we cannot make any statements concerning tax treatment of donations received from outside the United States. U.S. laws alone swamp our small staff. Please check the Project Gutenberg web pages for current donation methods and addresses. Donations are accepted in a number of other ways, including checks, online payments, and credit card donations. To donate, please visit www.gutenberg.org/donate. Section 5. General information about Project Gutenberg Electronic Works. Professor Michael S. Hart was the originator of the project. Gutenberg concept of a library of electronic works that could be freely shared with anyone. For 40 years, he produced and distributed Project Gutenberg ebooks with only a loose network of volunteer support. Project Gutenberg ebooks are often created from several printed editions, all of which are confirmed as not protected by copyright in the U.S. unless a copyright notice is included. Thus, we do not necessarily keep ebooks in compliance with any particular paper edition. Most people start at our website, which has the main PG search facility, www.gutenberg.org. This website includes information about Project Gutenberg, including how to make donations to the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation, how to help produce our new ebooks, and how to subscribe to our email newsletter to hear about new ebooks.